and outer walls was primitive, crude, a brute force approach to architecture. However, platoons of Sekhmen sporting autofire blasters patrolled the heights in grim resolution, hand-rolled cigarettes of local tobacco dangling from their tight-lipped mouths. The smokes offered only a small source of fleeting warmth against the bitter winds that flowed down from the surrounding mountain range like an invisible river of ice. In the cobblestone courtyards below, ragged slaves pushed ramshackle carts of withered winter vegetables and hauled buckets of muddy water past an ominous array of high wooden gallows. Several of the dangling nooses were occupied by the remains of outlanders. The rotting bodies had been left in full view of all, both as an object lesson to other would-be troublemakers and to lure in crows for the Citadel larder. No food of any kind was ever wasted in Novaville. Every movement and expression of the shuffling workers was duly scrutinized by fat overseers for any hint of rebellion, their own faces gleaming with health, coiled bullwhips of knotted leather held in calloused hands. Dressed in bulky military jackets and pre-dark jump boots, the guards still shivered from the omnipresent cold, and looked eagerly for any excuse from the prisoners to vent their displeasure at this onerous duty. However, deep inside the labyrinthine bowels of the massive stone citadel, a beautiful woman rose smiling and naked from a silver bathtub, the soapy water dripping off her long limbs and full breasts. Servants stepped forward with soft towels and began daintily drying off her alabaster skin. Primly, almost absent-mindedly, the lady ward Amanda Coulthier nodded approval at their gentle attention. Torches of pitch and wood lined the stone block walls, but those were only for emergencies. Chandeliers of electric lights hung from the oak rafters, filling the spacious room with illumination so bright that most visitors to the Citadel of Novaville considered it magic. Her brother Richard spoke from the other side of a folding lacquered screen.
"It's a foolish plan. Chances of success are very small."
The heiress to the Citadel ran strong fingers through her long silky hair as a young female slave stroked a soft towel along her inner thighs, then even higher, drying the woman everywhere.
"I agree, dearest brother." "There's no need to be so gentle, little one. I am not made of crystal."
The girl bowed.
"Yes, Lady Ward."
But her administrations became even more careful. Spreading her arms wide, Amanda allowed the other female slaves to dry her arms and towel her cascading blonde hair.
"It won't work."
"Perhaps. But more importantly, would Father approve of me trying?"
There came an unseen sigh from her brother, the deputy ward.
"Well, yes, of course. Cowards cannot rule a vill. But consider the danger."
Anger flared in Amanda's face for just a second, distorting the visage of beauty into a feral mask.
"Oh, my dearest brother, you know they must die, and as quickly as possible. Who better than I to accomplish the task?"
"So, when will you leave? This afternoon? Tonight? Under cover of darkness?"
"All in good time, brother. All in good time."
Ryan awoke to the sound of splashing. Popping a stick of MRE gum into his mouth to remove the sour taste of sleep, he checked out the starboard blaster port. The tank was lumbering across a shallow stream, the water foaming over its 15 tires. Then he noticed the vehicle had been organized while he slept, the spent shells from the 50 caliber and the rapid fires stuffed into boxes and tucked under seats. The rest of the supplies were piled on seats and strapped into place for ease of access. Everybody else was awake and sitting at their posts. Doc was in the driver's seat.
"Good morning."
"Morning. Where are we?"
"Just a mile or so from the skyscrapers. We thought you needed the rest."
"I did."
The smell of breakfast filled the air. Christy sipped coffee in the gunner's seat.
"Go eat. We already have."
"Thanks."
He found JB warming some rations in an aluminum frying pan held over a small campfire, made out of what appeared to be slats from a packing crate, the bits of wood stuffed inside a brass 75-millimeter shell. The shell was shoved through two large wooden slats in a cross pattern, which kept it from tumbling over.
"My idea. Jack did the carving.
Nice job. MRE rations, I see.
Yep. Powdered eggs, dehydrated bread, artificial butter, bacon, jerky, coffee, no sugar. The usual crap.
JB added another sliver of packing crate to the flames.
Doesn't taste bad.
Head worse.
Careful not to spill any, he filled a tin cup with pale coffee and stirred in the 100-year-old artificial cream powder.
No. Don't think I have. But it's warm and edible.
You say so. There's vacuum-packed nut cake for dessert, if you want some.
Anything that doesn't bite me first.
Ryan wolfed his meager share of the fare. Afterward, he used a rag and a canteen to wash the sleep from his face. Unceremoniously, J.B. shoved the breakfast debris out a window. Feeling vastly refreshed, Ryan checked his weapons and armed himself properly.
I'll take over, Doc.
Certainly. However, it is too much trouble to start and stop this cumbersome dreadnought. Grab hold of the wheel, and as I slide out, you squeeze in.
The exchange was made without mishap. Ryan settled into the task, almost enjoying it. Less than an hour later, the soaring skyscrapers were readily visible over the treetops, and Ryan looked for a clear path through the trees to the city beyond. Locating a breach, he lumbered onto the muddy shore and directed Leviathan along a cracked concrete stretch that angled off in the correct direction. Soon, the burned-out frames of individual homes marked the beginning of the old civilization. Sometimes only a bent stack of chimney stones remained to show where a home had once stood. Wordlessly, they passed the crumbled remains of stores and shops, the glass windows long gone, molding leaves piled high inside. Then the road became smoother, with more ruined houses appearing until they regularly lined both sides of the street. As Leviathan advanced farther, the buildings looked to be in better condition, until they crossed some railroad tracks and entered a warehouse district. Here the streets were covered with a thick cushion of green ivy that grew along the outside of everything in sight. Odd lumps dotting the street were presumably parked cars. Filling every block, hundreds of green buildings rose six or more stories tall, and standing as sparkling glass giants among these were the skyscrapers, their pinnacles nearly out of sight. The company names on the lintels were readable, but meant nothing. Jack furrowed his brow.
How big?
Mildred abandoned her attempt to read a vine-covered movie marquee.
30 stories? Maybe 40. Surely no higher than that.
Jack stared at the woman as if she had clearly gone insane.
Meant people.
Oh, population? I don't know. Maybe 100,000?
Doc shuddered.
I would postulate a neutron bomb.
I agree. Damn the fools. God damn them all.
A what?
Dean was unable to look away from the city. So much green. Could the ivy be protecting the city from the terrible effects of the acid rains? Ryan made sure Leviathan didn't bump into any of the lumps in the street.
The ancient whitecoats had lots of different boomers. I read a long time ago that the worst was the hellstorm. It set fire to the atmosphere. Second worst was the neutron. It killed people but didn't damage the buildings or machines.
Just killed the people?
Killed everything alive. People, bugs, bathroom fungus, anything.
Except ivy.
JB scowled at the lush plants rustling at their approach. All this green was unnatural.
Have found what we need.
Keep a watch for machine shops and gas stations. If need be, we'll climb down into some elevator shafts. Maintenance department is always in the basement. The oil from the hydraulic pumps will do fine for the transmission.
Excellent.
I wonder why this city has not been occupied. These buildings are in perfect condition.
Christie pointed with her gun barrel.
Impossible to defend. Too many windows.
JB checked his counter.
Rad is clear.
Leviathan proceeded slowly toward the center of the wide street, the ivy crushing softly under the military tires. Most of the store signs were impossible to read, either covered by the plants or damaged by minor rust. The few they could decipher weren't helpful. Clothing stores with mannequins in the windows, pizza parlors, bookstores with white rectangles displayed, the covers bleached from decades of exposure to sunlight.
No people in sight, or any sign of them.
Ryan turned to Christie.
You feel anything?
Christy shook her head.
No norms or muties, but there's something alive out there.
Maybe the ivy?
That's just a plant.
Not exactly. Ivy isn't a separate crop,